Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. First on the docket, how can you represent guilty people? Second, the grim sleeper serial killer cheats death imposed by the state of California. Third, what not to do when stopped by the police these days. And fourth, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. Now, a lot of people tune into this channel because I am a criminal defense attorney. I have been doing it for some 25 years, and I hope that's the reason why you watch. I bring you the information from both sides and in a little greater detail than what you're going to get on the evening news. And for that, we hope you subscribe. If you haven't already subscribed, hit that little subscribe button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications, and as always, leave us a comment below. Now, first on the docket, how can you represent those guilty people? Well, let me tell you, I've been getting asked this question for so many years by friends, by family, by so many of you on YouTube. Would you represent blank? Would you represent so-and-so if they came to represent you? And the reality of it is, yes, okay? Let's take a quick look as to why every criminal defendant is entitled to an attorney, all right? Now, understand, the attorney representing them may not necessarily like their client. They more than likely, certainly are not condoning what their client did, and they're simply there to make sure that their constitutional rights are protected. Because, ladies and gentlemen, if we let the government convict or railroad guilty people, they will start to believe or think that they can railroad innocent people as well. So, everybody hates that criminal defense attorney that's representing the most heinous criminal of the week. I get it. Been there, done that. Frankly, I think any trial attorney, particularly any criminal defense trial attorney, would say, give me the worst. Give me the most heinous thing that they have done, and I will represent them. I know I certainly did that, particularly in my younger days, was like, bring it on. Let's do this thing, all right? And so first we start at the United States Constitution, all right? The Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution states, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. So there you go. Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, written in there by our founding fathers in the Bill of Rights. Remember the Bill of Rights, those first 10 amendments that the states would not ratify the Constitution if they were not there. All right? Sixth Amendment, right to a speedy public jury trial, right to compulsory process, which basically means to subpoena witnesses, be able to confront and cross-examine your accusers, and a right to an attorney, all right? Guaranteed constitutional right. Now, I've said this before, and I seem to get a lot of grief sometimes. I love all the amendments to the Constitution, not just the ones I personally agree with, all right? Because they're there for people to actually exercise those rights. And if you don't exercise your rights, they will be taken away from you. Well, guess what? It wasn't until 1963 that this United States Supreme Court actually guaranteed the right to counsel, okay? You could have an attorney if you could afford one. You could have an attorney if maybe it was a unique case. You could have an attorney if maybe you were maybe a little mentally slow or incapacitated of some type. But other than that, it was fundamentally believed that, hey, if you can't afford an attorney, you can certainly go out there and do your best as a pro se defendant. All right? And a pro se defendant, ladies and gentlemen, is held to the same standards as that of a practicing attorney, okay? Which means that you have to know the rules of evidence, the rules of criminal procedure, and all the subsequent case law that's come down interpreting basically constitutional law, criminal law, the nuances to the rules of evidence, as well as the rules of criminal procedure. When to make that motion for judgment of acquittal, and under what rule might it be? Do you think you could do that? Most people probably could not. Do you think that if you had a loved one, no matter how heinous a thing that they have been accused of doing, or maybe something minor that you're maybe just embarrassed for what they've done, but you know that they're still a good person, don't you think you'd like to have an attorney to go in there and zealously represent him, and at a minimum to make sure that they're treated fairly and not getting railroaded? I would think you all would. But let's talk about the case of Mr. Wainwright. And there's a case. It was a 9-0 decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1963. Now, Mr. Wainwright had been charged with a felony alleging burglary of a pool hall in Panama City, Panama. At his first trial in 1961, Mr. Wainwright had requested an attorney to assist him in his defense. That request was denied. At the trial, prosecutors produced a witness who saw Gideon outside the pool hall near the time of the break-in, but none who saw him commit the crime. Gideon cross-examined witnesses, but he was unable to impeach their credibility or point out the contradictions in their testimony. Why is that significant, ladies and gentlemen? Because you just can't say to a witness, liar, liar, pants on fire. You actually have to impeach a witness. And there's a proper way to impeach a witness. Show of hands. Who here thinks that they could impeach a witness on their own in accordance with the rules of evidence? I don't see a lot of hands. That's right, because there's a certain way you do it. First of all, you have to lock them into their statement that they're admitting to in court. Then you have to confront them with the previous statement, usually a transcript or some other statement, or have the person that say that they said that another statement waiting in the hallway to impeach them if they don't concede to making the prior inconsistent statement. All right? That is something most people wouldn't know. And guess what? That's exactly what Mr. Wainwright did not know how to do in his first trial. Needless to say, Mr. Wainwright was obviously found guilty, otherwise his case would not have gone up on appeal. The Supreme Court for Florida affirmed the decision and said that basically he had received a fair trial even though he had not had an attorney. So Mr. Wainwright, sitting in his prison cell because he received a 5-year sentence, filed a writ of habeas corpus to the United States Supreme Court. And he basically said he didn't receive a fair trial under the Due Process Clause and a Sixth Amendment right to counsel, even though he had requested one. He basically said, I have neither the legal training, skill, or knowledge to zealously represent myself, and that I would be ineffective as an attorney if I were asked to do so by myself. Now, right about this time, the Supreme Court had dealt with several cases concerning the right to counsel. And back in 1932, in a case called Powell v. Alabama, which involved what they referred to at the time the Scottsboro Boys, 9 black youths had been found guilty of raping 2 white women, and the court had ruled that the indigent defendants, the broke, couldn't afford an attorney, charged with capital crimes were entitled to legal counsel. So that was one of the unique cases, right? Now, in Betts v. Brady, however, a 1942 Supreme Court case, the United States Supreme Court decided that assigned counsel was not required in felony cases except when there were special circumstances, notably that the defendant was illiterate or mentally challenged. Very limited set of circumstances unless it was a capital case. So in January of 1963, United States Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the Gideon v. Wainwright case. And Mr. Wainwright, by this time, actually was able to get an attorney pro bono. And his attorney was a name by the name of Abe Fortas. He was an attorney in D.C. So Mr. Fortas asserted on behalf of Mr. Wainwright that no defendant, however competent or well-educated, could provide an adequate self-defense against the state prosecuting the individual, and that the United States Constitution ensured legal representation to all defendants charged with a felony. 2 months after the Supreme Court heard oral arguments, the court unanimously agreed by 9-0 that the denial of an attorney violated the 14th Amendment, which guarantees due process. That case of Gideon v. Wainwright overturned the Betts case, and Mr. Wainwright was given an attorney for his retrial. And guess what? He was found not guilty. The next time somebody thinks, how could that attorney possibly represent somebody accused of such a heinous crime? Like I said before, they're representing, they're defending the constitutional rights, not only of the accused, but of everyone out there. All right? Now, I have said this before. No one in the government gets up in the morning and says, how do we limit our power? How do we limit what we can do? The only people that get out there and do that on a daily basis are criminal defense attorneys that say, no, you can't do that. No, you can't do that, officer. That was an unreasonable search and seizure. No, state, you cannot obtain those wiretaps. They were obtained illegally. And no, you cannot bring that evidence in because it is inadmissible under the rules of evidence. Every time a criminal defense attorney gets in there and represents the accused, any accused, whether it's simply a traffic ticket or something more serious like a capital murder case, they are protecting the rights. I guarantee you, most of the time, the attorneys will not condone what the accused has done, no matter how mild or how heinous it could possibly be. But they're there to do it. And next time you think about it, and I've said this before, no one expects to get in trouble. And in your lifetime, whether it's you, a close family member, or a friend, is going to need a criminal defense attorney at one point in their life. And I guarantee you, you will want them to have the most competent counsel that they can possibly afford or retain. And you would want them to make sure that the rules were followed and to make sure that they have received no greater punishment than is reasonably necessary to make sure that their future conduct is deterred. So thank you for all the questions. Hopefully I've answered it for everybody as to how can you represent guilty people. Next on the docket, the Grim Sleeper, a.k.a. Lonnie Franklin Jr., has died. He was 67 years old, and Mr. Franklin preyed on South Los Angeles women for more than 2 decades and apparently was found unresponsive in his cell Saturday evening. And just so we're clear, that prison cell was at the San Quentin State Prison's death row. There are reports that there are no signs of trauma, so more than likely it was natural causes. Now, Mr. Franklin was convicted in 2016, and the jury ultimately ruled in California that he should be put to death for the murder of 10 women during a 23-year killing spree, which began in 1984. Jurors found that Mr. Franklin had committed first-degree murder of Deborah Jackson, Henrietta Wright, Mary Lowe, Bernita Sparks, Barbara Ware, Lucretia Jefferson, Monique Alexander, Princess Bartholomew, Valerie McCorvey, and Janice Peters. He was also found guilty of attempted murder of Enrita Washington, who testified at the trial that Franklin had shot her, sexually assaulted her, and took a Polaroid picture of her before he pushed her out of his car some 27 years prior. Now, Franklin preyed on young women, vulnerable black women who lived in South Los Angeles and struggled with drug addiction. Nearly every one of his victims were found naked or partially clothed and dumped in filthy neighborhood alleyways, left to rot under the garbage and debris in those alleys. Every one of his victims were shot at close range with a .25 caliber pistol or strangled or both. Franklin's last victim was 25-year-old Peters on January of 2007. His youngest victim was 15. That was Miss Bartholomew. She was a runaway who was found strangled in an alley in Inglewood, California. Now, the grim sleeper cases, which were Mr. Franklin's, remained cold for decades until the Los Angeles Police Department realized that 7 of his killings in the 80s were linked through DNA and ballistics to deaths in 2002, 2003, and 2007. Now, Franklin's DNA profile was not in the CODIS system. That's the system where everybody who's arrested or sent to prison, they take a buccal swab, upload their DNA sample to this system so that they can be linked with other identifying systems, so that they can be linked with other DNA potential matches. What's interesting about Franklin's case was that he was finally caught in July of 2010 through familial DNA testing after his then 28-year-old son, Christopher, was arrested for carrying a weapon in the summer of 2009 and had to give up a DNA sample, just like I mentioned. In most states, if you're arrested for a felony, they take your DNA swab. If you're convicted, go to prison, they take your DNA swab. Those are all uploaded to a DNA database, and they're compared. The profile is compared, and people can compare it to other cases around the country. So once it was determined that Christopher was related to the killer, detectives followed the elder Franklin to a pizza restaurant. And as Franklin finished his meal, a detective who was posing as a busboy collected a fork, 2 plastic cups, and a plate, and a pizza slice left by Franklin. A DNA profile was collected from those samples and was created, and a match, in fact, came back to Franklin on many of those cases. And that's good police work. You hear more and more about familial DNA testing, because a lot of these 23andMe or the genealogy sites, you upload your DNA, they allow access to government agencies for that. And if they can find a partial DNA, which is close, then they start looking at other family members who are related to the close match DNA, and then they can break that case. I think I've heard at least of some 20 cases to date where familial DNA has been rather significant. Haven't had to deal with that one just yet, personally, when it comes to representing clients, but I'm sure it is forthcoming. And there was nothing that the defense could have done in Franklin's case whereby his samples, his trash was collected and taken for samples, because it's basically trash. He had discarded his samples. It's like putting your trash in the garbage. Anybody can go through your garbage at the end of the street. You have no expectation of privacy. If the government wants to go through your trash while it's in the garbage can in your house, they need a warrant. Once you put it outside, you've abandoned it. Anybody can go through it. So, Grim Reaper cheats death from the state of California, but at least it's over with at this point. Next on the docket, what not to do when you're being arrested. Now, we've had several cases that we've talked about on our Dumb Criminal of the Week since the coronavirus has started. Well, a young man in Florida by the name of Christopher Perez, he was 23, ultimately pulled over because of some poor driving. Turned out he was ultimately drunk. He tells the police officer that he is positive for the coronavirus and coughs in the officers' faces. Now, cops have to put up with a lot of crap from a lot of people. Most of the time, completely things that neither one of us would tolerate, and police officers exercise great restraint when doing that. But if somebody's going to cough in your face or spit in your face, I just have no tolerance for that. It's just me individually. Have a little respect for people. Anyway, Mr. Perez tells the cops, he pleads guilty. They're just doing their job. He was the one that was charged with drunk driving because he was allegedly drunk behind the wheel. They even gave him a mask once he made his comments, but he took it upon himself to remove his mask and cough in the face of the officers. Mr. Perez was ultimately charged with terroristic threats. That's what you don't do when you're being contacted by the police. Even if you don't like what the police are doing, if you think that what they're doing is unconstitutional, that they have no basis for it, guess what? You have to go along with it and you challenge it in court. Coughing in someone's face is not going to get you anything but trouble. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And I don't know what it is about Florida, but they have an excessively high level of dumb criminal conduct. I'm not exactly sure why there seems to be so much. And I thought it was just Colorado. But the suspect in this particular case, and he is innocent until proven guilty, but his name is Ray Long. Well, apparently Long, 29, went into a Dillard's store in an attempt to avoid arrest for shoplifting. Now, what Mr. Dillard was shoplifting was ladies' underwear. And what Mr. Long did was that he was observed putting ladies' underwear into a backpack and then going into a dressing room, whereupon his exit from the changing room, he was met by security as well as police. Now, this is another thing of what not to do when contacted by the police. Running is usually not a good thing to do. You will be caught, they will get you, and usually they'll kick your ass. I mean, there's a little less and less of that these days because so many body cams and video cameras, but that's normally what happened after a good police chase or run, to, you know, stop resisting, that kind of thing. Anyway, that didn't happen here to Mr. Long, fortunately. The bigger question is, what was Mr. Long doing with the women's lingerie? Was it a gift, perhaps? Was it for personal use? Why was he stealing it? Could he, I don't know, maybe have avoided detection had he put it on in the dressing room instead of just stuffing it further into his backpack? Perhaps. My guess is people are never going to look at Mr. Long the same way again and wonder why he's stealing that lady's lingerie. But Mr. Long, for your running from the police officers, knowing that you had been basically caught red-handed, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. As always, in these unprecedented and difficult times, we urge everybody to stay safe, wash your hands, exercise some social distancing, and watch lots of YouTube, particularly Crime Talk. You may have noticed we have a lot of videos. We've been putting up content for almost every day for over a year. So there's lots of videos that you can watch below. Please feel free to watch them all. Watch them twice. Share them with your friends. We encourage you to do so. Also, if you say, hey, I can't get enough of this Scott Reich, what else could he give me for free other than all his videos? Well, you can go to scottreich.com and sign up for our free weekly newsletter. Your names won't be given to other people. We don't bombard you with any sort of advertising. It's just other things that are going on in the news that we don't have enough time to cover every day. And who knows? Maybe you'll find some of it interesting and perhaps even educational. That's the goal of this channel. And ultimately, if you say, wow, this Scott Reich gives me free videos, free newsletter, there's got to be something else he can give me for free, right? Well, no. But if you'd like to go to our Patreon page and sign up for various levels, you can spend a lot of time with me. You can get some cool merchandise just for signing up. And if you say, hey, I don't want to sign up for that Patreon thing, you can go to the link below to Teespring and order your Crime Talk merchandise, whether it's a nice mug or whether it is in fact a t-shirt or a sweatshirt. You can have the same ones that I have. And guess what? It's almost free. So give it a shot. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of Crime Talk. We'll see you next time.